Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
Page 94, the Private Eye Podcast.
Hey, everybody. And when I say hey, I mean hey, festival, everybody. Welcome to a live episode of Page 94, recorded here at Hay. So without further ado, let's get into it.
First question for all of you. We have a once-loved, now-hated Labour Prime Minister, came to office in a landslide, is now completely loathed, his legacy in ruins. Is there any way back for Tony Blair?
I'm going to go first as the lonely Tony defender on the panel. Mm. I grew up in the... Well, I was a teenager in the late 90s, right? So I lived through the kind of a new dawn has broken, has it not? I still think that new Labour record is really good. But the thing that we're talking about tonight is the fact that Tony Blair has decided to make one of... It was described as a rare intervention. I was like, I don't think it is it, really?
No.
But into the Labour leadership contest, where he said a variety of things. The thing I think he said that was true is that Keir Starmer came into that Labour leadership essentially painting himself as continuity Corbyn. He then pivoted very hard afterwards to say, actually, I'm going to put the left back in the sealed tomb of Mandelson. Worked out badly.
Yeah.
And then now is kind of just...
If anyone can escape a sealed tomb, it's Peter Mandelson.
It's Peter Mandelson. Rises. But then essentially, without a proper programme for government, without a governing ideology, you will snap back into a sort of wishy-washy, soft left comfort zone. You know, that is a legitimate ideology, but you have to kind of make a case for it, not just it be the kind of default that you come back to. And I think that's the problem. The people around Starmer thought they were very clever, that they said, well, we're not getting involved in these Labour wars. We're not Bennite or Blairite or Wilsonite or Callaghanite or whatever it might be. Castleite.
But we are shite.
That's the only ite that we are. But as it's turned out, that's the problem, is that no one knows what they think.
Yeah, I couldn't see in his arguments any policies that haven't already been adopted by the Conservatives and Reform. Which is interesting, because if he wants to say, hi, vote Tory, that's a different view from
him. He's free to do so, yeah.
How did you feel about his thoughts on oil and gas, Andy?
Loved them. Couldn't fault them. quite impressive on a 35-degree day to sign off an argument that says, more oil and gas, that's what we need. That's the secure future we need. No, his views are consistent. He believes that we need more oil and gas. He believes we need to rip up the Clean Power 2030 commitment. He's proposing the same things you would do if you were a climate denier, and which, in fact, Reform and the Conservatives are pitching at the moment. There is a reason that China are installing hundreds of gigawatts. Basically, 1 gigawatt is a large nuclear power station. China's installing hundreds of gigawatts of solar power every year. They are not doing that because they've had a really inspiring talk from Greta Thunberg. They're doing that for very hard-nosed reasons of their own energy security. You know, they are not dependent on a mad choke point in the Middle East that can apparently be closed at any time. And they're doing it for reasons of cost. You know, China's electrified more of its economy than we have by about 35 to 25%. China has overtaken us in the race to get things clean and efficient.
Do you know, I could tell that I've spent too much time sitting in a room with you, because as I was reading it, I thought, it's fascinating to me that he's very excited about AI. Now, the Tony Blair Global Institute has lots of links with AI companies, and I think there is a genuine, sincere thing there, which is he just loves the future. It's shiny and new and exciting. Mm-hmm. And I thought there's a really big contrast with, why is he not excited about clean energy? Incredible strides of technological advance in the last decade that we've passed. But that one apparently is not exciting to him.
Well, because none of the people he meets at international conferences are going on about that. What they are saying is AI is fantastic, and because he's an enthusiast, he has no idea what AI is. nor do I, but I know on the whole it isn't good to encourage the end of humanity yourself, personally. I feel that isn't a good policy. And also telling people, what we're going to do is we're going to take away all your jobs, particularly, you know, your jobs in the audience, and in return, we're going to rip up your environment and fill it full of data centres. How does that grab you? I mean, that if you just like bleak future apocalypses, then Tony's your man. Also, I just can't... I'm just going to get it out of my system.
Yeah, go on. Let it out.
Just vent.
As soon as you see the words, the Tony Blair Institute...
For global change.
Yeah, for furthering the knowledge of Tony Blair... you just start thinking, what's this? And what are his two main points? Get closer to Trump. Even Reform doesn't want to get closer to Trump. I mean, how right-wing is Blair now?
But as you say, Helen, the point you are a fan of is that he's identified that you need to have a plan and execute it, even if that means annoying people. And that does seem to be something that people feel is lacking. Whether or not it is, people really have identified the lack of a message. We've had so many... sort of missions and what were there? There were the missions, there were the pledges, there were the...
Milestones, I believe there were. There was sadly no revival of the Edstone.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. I think it's quite hard to work out why Keir Starmer's approval ratings are so low and he's so hated. But I think it's the sense that that he's vapour, that there's nothing there. Yeah. And I think that that's the kind of... That is the point. I take your point saying this stuff, but on the domestic analysis, and as Tony Blair is only too keen to remind us himself, he is the only Labour leader ever to have won 3 general election victories. Like, he does know something about making and winning a political argument. And one of the things that Jess Phillips said in her resignation letter we talked about in the last pod was, we don't want to have an argument, therefore we don't go out and make an argument. We're afraid to make enemies. And actually, Adam... It turns out they're listening to you, because Keir Starmer's all the briefing this week was about banning social media for under-16s and actually making villains out of the tech bosses.
The other thing that she said, wasn't it, was that if there was a crisis, she would take advantage of it. And it's got a good example of that, that she suddenly said, well, why not this? And he's jumped in and kind of gone, that's his big thing, isn't it? Yeah, but it just feels like there's an absolute sense of drift at the top at the moment, doesn't it? And bizarrely, they seem to think that the answer to that is to spend 6 weeks having a by-election and then a Labour leadership election, during which time nothing else will get done either. No. So on we go.
But there are, I mean, ideas are being discussed, which is at least, you know, so whether you like the ideas or not, that it is forcing a lot of the party to sort of have a chat with itself about whatever it might be, about defence, about health, about Brexit.
Huge failure of their time in opposition there. Because I'm a massive nerd. I read Philip Gould's The Unfinished Revolution. So he was the pollster who was intimately involved with New Labour. And what they did was they spent the mid-90s going away and having all those arguments internally and doing them. That was what we were told Starmer was doing. That was what Sue Gray was supposed to be bringing in her like roadmap for, you know, not Armageddon, the opposite, utopia. And then they got in and they were like, oh, we're in charge. Oh, no. Have you seen these finances? These are terrible. I wish someone had said something. And yes, so I agree with you. It's good for them to have that argument. A better time to have that argument would have been in, say, May 2024, before they had a crack at running the country.
But what they were doing then was the definition. They defined themselves by just saying, well, I'm not Corbyn. I'm very definitely not Corbyn. And can we just emphasise that I'm really, really not Corbyn? And then it sort of never got further than the party stuff, did it? There didn't ever seem to be a kind of like a big idea. And the Barack Obama hopey changey stuff, as it's referred to, just seemed to be completely absent.
Sir Tony, in the Blair Institute for further Blairology, he said, why is the Labour Party, you know, obsessed by the idea of finding a charismatic personality? It should be about policy. And this is from Tony Blair, whose main attraction was a charismatic personality. He seems to have forgotten Gordon Brown.
No, I think he thinks about Gordon Brown a lot.
Oh, do you think so?
Not as much as Gordon Brown thinks about him.
Yes.
Yeah. We should be dishing out some equal opportunity kickings as well. Yes. So let's turn right.
What, from Sir Tony?
Okay, let's stay exactly where Sir Tony is, because at the time of recording, many of you here will have seen Nigel Farage, leader of Reform UK, has 5 million excuses for why he took a massive donation from a Thai-based crypto billionaire.
Yep.
The party's Reform candidate in the by-election has, you know, there have been some reputationally challenging things that have emerged about him.
What, you mean the the social media posts.
Yes, but in this by-election, the really weird thing is that Reform are being outflanked on the right.
Yeah, so Rupert Lowe's outfit, Restore, this is going to be a really interesting test. So people who run focus groups say that Restore is being brought up in them. It's, you know, they're always a challenge in the first past the post, is it very difficult for new entrants, very hostile to new entrants. So he has essentially got the backing, the very vocal backing of Elon Musk, who's about as popular as gonorrhea in this country, but has a lot of money. And also, he has gone way beyond. I mean, okay, so you've already got a situation in which Reform, Zaha Yusuf, is saying we would deport foreign nationals who've got social housing. Right? So that's, you know, we're already getting close to the Trumpy mass deportation zone. Rupert Lowe has bulldozed straight beyond that, right? He said something about he wants to take all immigrants and put them on a midge-infested island and leave the midges to it, right? We're now at fully far-right rhetoric.
Yeah.
So the interesting question is, for the other parties, it's electorally useful to have Restore exist because it will drain some Reform supporters away in the way that the BNP would have done, right, if you think about where that party is. But in no way do you want to encourage the growth of a far-right party with that kind of rhetoric. So there will be this awkward dance where people will be slightly keeping their gloves on about not wanting to quash this party for electoral reasons when they really should, because letting it grow and fester will be horrible, you know, make this country horrible to live in.
Adam, you did an event earlier, and one of the points reflected on was just how angry Britain seems these days. You know, there is a widespread mass, it's not irritation, it's further than that, it is anger about the feeling that nothing works, that big bits of the state are not doing their job properly, lots of other people are getting away with it and you're not.
You know. Well, I feel we've hit this point. It comes back to that hopey changey stuff I was talking about. It doesn't feel like anyone is voting for any sort of positive reasons anymore. Everyone is voting against things rather than voting for things. And even within parties, you know, the massive swing to the Greens, some of it's down to Zach Polanski being very, very charismatic and them sort of coming out of nowhere as effectively a new party under his leadership. But an awful lot of it is because a lot of people in Labour are absolutely furious about where Labour sit on what Israel is doing in Gaza. And it's the single issues that people fixate on, get extreme. Like immigration on the right, that people fixate on that one thing which they're very, very angry about, and it just seems to me they're voting against stuff. No one seems to me to be telling any sort of positive story about where Britain could be. They're telling us it's broken and it's terrible and it's awful, and surely that's our job as journalists. It's not wrong with politics.
But to go back to Sir Blessed Toblerone, there was another bit where he talked about the allure of people like Javier Milei in Argentina, you know, Mr. Chainsaw, who communes with his dead dogs through seances. As do we all sometimes, but Giorgio Meloni of Italy and Trump, where he said the normal institutional politicians, they approach a wall in the road and they then have a kind of committee meeting to see how we could get around it. And then these populist right politicians just threaten to bulldoze through the wall. And that's what people are voting for. They want something to happen. And they feel that there are all these ways in which nothing ever changes, nothing ever happens. And I do think that does capture some of what you were saying. There was an analysis of the recent council elections which said essentially you can break down Britain to four blocks. If you're older and financially precarious, you're voting Reform. If you're younger and financially precarious, you're voting Green. If you're older and financially secure, you're voting Conservative. And if you're younger and financially secure, you're voting Labour. And that's a huge oversimplification, but there is an alliance there between people who feel that their lives are not secure in some way, and then they have the, like, well, burn it all down then. Like, you know, I've got no stake in this system anyway. You know, that I think, is a very powerful force in British politics right now.
But comparatively, a lot...
It's like question time.
But comparatively, a lot of those things are driven by online media narratives that aren't necessarily true.
Yeah.
So a lot of anger is generated about issues which don't affect people hugely and which are not quite the same issues as those presented. So I feel what's different, people say, you know, what's different about the current situation, is that people are allowed to vent this anger in very, very blatant and toxic ways online, and then they bring it into the real world. And we haven't had that. And then they're suddenly shocked when someone says, well, this unbelievably offensive thing you wrote, it was a long time ago. And you go, it was last week. And they go, I'm a different person. You think, you're not, though, are you? And then it was banter. I mean, you know, I'd have statutory imprisonment for banter myself.
But, tough on banter, tough on the causes of banter.
Yeah. These are just ways of saying we've normalised a way of being angry and furious and, about things that doesn't necessarily reflect what's happening. And it's part of the reason, you know, the Eye satirises a lot of the mainstream narratives from the right as well as on the thing, is because they have gone into complete lunacy. And the Britain is broken narrative, again, it sells well, nothing works, everything's useless. That just isn't true. And in a lot of spheres, this isn't Pangloss, that's not really my thing, but in a lot of spheres, all that is happening is you are hearing the noise and you're not hearing anything else. And that, I think, becomes a problem.
Well, a lot of it is down to sort of what your algorithm serves you, and it serves you the stuff that is making you angry, but it serves you more of the stuff that you liked anyway. And there's no sort of room for any sort of counter-narrative to come at that. I mean, the number of people, Rupert Lowe is among them, who are absolutely convinced that the mainstream media were ignoring the child grooming scandals for decades until Elon Musk stumbled over it early last year. I mean, was it 2012 that we gave the Paul Foote Award for Investigative Journalism to Andrew Norfolk for the work that he did? I mean, the reason people know about this stuff is because the police investigations that went on at the time and the journalists who wrote about them.
Yes.
Just and because it's taken them that long to notice it doesn't mean it wasn't happening.
And he wrote it in an obscure journal called The Times. It was on the front page. Oh, mainstream media. Lamestream media, I call them.
I do think it's hard if you don't consume a lot of this content just to realise how incredibly heightened emotionally it is. So if you're watching short form video, you know you're just getting stuff pumped at you. There is an established problem on X, formerly Twitter, of creators sitting in other countries, you know, like whether basically people who are sitting alone at their computer in somewhere like Malaysia, creating clips about the kind of Islamic takeover of London.
Yes.
And you have this very odd situation. You know, I spend a lot of time writing about America, where you have Americans who live in cities with unbelievably high homicide rates, kind of going, is everything okay in London?
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some bits of it are quite nice, actually. But they're all they get fed is basically Sadiq Khan's Sharia wasteland over and over and over again. And they're sitting in, you know, Chicago. And then they're worrying about our safety. And these are incredibly heightened. There's another thing, Jim Watson of London Centric bust open a ring of this. A guy going into houses in multiple occupation and filming videos saying, these people are all Muslims, none of them speak English, they have a halal-only house and it's all social housing. And there is fundamentally no sanction on that. The social media companies aren't investigating. Well, aren't interested in moderating it.
That investigation, it wasn't true. I mean, the people living in those houses were not.
Well, not only was it nonsensical, but it turned out the guy responsible was the estate agent who was letting out those houses, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So if that had been the case, that would have been down to him, really.
Yeah.
Easy to find the culprit. That's the kind of thing. And as Adam said, if you watch one of those and you like it and it made you furious. Yeah. Guess what's coming along in a minute is 400 more videos.
It's very interesting because I literally only get heat pump stuff, so I have no idea what this. I live
Man,
in a fool's
a fun
paradise.
Guy.
That's all. Helen, you said if you're feeling precarious or comfortable, and if you're older or younger. Now you didn't mention what happens if you're feeling precarious or comfortable, and you live in Wales or Scotland, because we've got Plaid Cymru and we've got the SNP.
Well, I also didn't mention the Lib Dems. Because I don't know where they fit into that matrix. So there are many people who are excluded from the matrix.
Absolutely. But I think we shouldn't, you know, given the day we're recording this on, we shouldn't miss out the SNP. And I think... and we know Plaid have done marvellously, and congratulations to them. But for each of you, what are your favourite items from Peter Murrell's... I nearly said expenses, but it's not an expense if you've embezzled it. But do you have any top picks? This is now Shopping Channel section of the evening.
I mean, the headline one that everybody's focused on is the £2,600 Lalique salt and pepper shakers. Because I just think almost no one else realised that, what can you do to a salt and pepper shaker to make it really like...
There was a pencil sharpener that was worth about a grand. How do you make a pencil sharpener that is worth that much?
Out of diamonds. My favourite one was that he embezzled a copy of his wife's book of speeches.
am I wrong?
Could have absolutely got a comp from the publisher.
Yes.
That's where I have some sympathy from, because I wouldn't spend my money on Nicholas Sturgeon's speeches. It was the coffee machines that got me.
Oh, no, did you see that? Come on. If your husband embezzled a copy of your latest book, you'd be fuming with him.
I think, to be honest, he probably wants freebies. I think if I made him go out and buy it, it'd be more furious.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
No, the coffee machines were amazing. There's about three £2,000 coffee machines in there.
Wow.
And special special espresso, Le Creuset espresso and cappuccino mugs, a manual espresso maker, a coffee cup warmer, which was a thing I didn't even know existed. But then at the bottom of
that's a hand. After just all a the hand.
After all the beans, also 2 kilograms of Nescafe Gold Blend, which were worth £81.16. Who was that for? That's, if the builders were in.
That's when journalists come round and you have to pretend to be of the people. Yeah.
But I realised who he is at that point. He's the coffee bore. There's one in every office who has a cold compress thing that they want to tell you about how it makes the best coffee ever and it will change your life. That's Peter Murrell. I mean, other people's money.
The timing is what I like. They managed to conclude this investigation after the election,
right?
In which the SNP did very well. And thank you to all the Scots Nat supporters who've written me abuse over the years for ever questioning the probity of the leadership of the SNP. I mean, it is extraordinary that we're talking about £400,000. The excuse given, and a number of people are questioning whether Nicola Sturgeon's account of this is entirely reliable. She's been found innocent, just making that very clear. But, you know, she said they had separate bank accounts, they were both earning top salaries. They were both earning about 100 grand each. So after tax, that's about 100 grand. If your joint household income goes from 100 grand to 500 grand, you might notice. Now, if you're at the Scottish Police, you launch an investigation which takes a very, 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 very long time. And only comes to its conclusion after it's far too late to affect fortunes of the politicians of the time. This is pretty fishy. Scottish politics is very small. It involves a lot of the same people. Some of them are married to each other. Some of them aren't anymore. But the idea that your First Minister, leader of the SNP, you want to renegotiate the financial situation between Scotland and England, and you don't know your husband's embezzled 400 grand. Darling, there's a new camper van. Is there? That's lovely, darling. Let's put it in the drive. I mean, it's
of your
just...
mother. Let's put it in your mother-in-law's
drive. The 93-year-old mother who didn't drive. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to press on. Because
can I just say that John Swinney may have done the first and maybe only joke of his life? Did you see this?
No.
Inadvertently, they said, do you think Nicola Sturgeon was really cooperating with the police when she just said no comment for 7 hours? And he said, no comment.
Lovely, lovely.
Secret of comedy is timing.
Very strong, very strong.
From John Swinney.
All right, well, look, speaking of terrific crooks, we must turn to America. So, Helen, you cover a lot of American affairs. We're now... How long? I think 7 or 8 years into Trump's second term, just by vibes alone. How is it going, and where are we in comparison with where we were the first time around, if you see what I mean? You know, a year and a bit in.
Can you even remember what the end of 2017, the beginning of 2018 were like? They're now the sort of mists of time. Well, Trump has just, I mean, talk about being a massive crook. He has absolutely plundered the American state. So he's got his sons involved in a crypto business. You know, he's doing deals with various Middle East and Gulf monarchies that seem to be basically his foreign policy has been an extension of his hotel business. And, you know, the other thing is he just has this situation now where he will just pardon people if they've donated money to him, which just sort of seems fairly just obviously crooked, but it's sort of apparently due to a loophole absolutely fine.
Yeah.
So the latest thing he's done is he's created a huge slush fund, or the Department of Justice created a huge slush fund, over $1 billion, to basically pay off people like the January 6th rioters who've been victims of miscarriages of justice. Now, you've covered miscarriages of justice in your time.
Mm.
I would say that people who turned up, hit a policeman over the head with a truncheon while dressed as, you know, I don't know, it's sort of like a...
Shamans.
Yeah, shamans or whatever. And not... I'd probably put, like, the post office people slightly higher on the list than them, you know? So I think that he has basically checked out of the American presidency. What happened is he came in with this blueprint for government from the Heritage Foundation, Project 2025. He went through a blizzard of executive orders, which all American presidents have come to rely on now, essentially. It's a very cheap way of kind of getting things without having to do them through Congress. And then has just become wildly distracted by the Iran war. There's talk about them doing some kind of incursion into Cuba, but they just kind of don't really have the bandwidth for it, but they might do it anyway because they're bonkers. And he's meanwhile just, I think also he feels very lame duck in the sense that he's already got a gold statue of himself, and he's just got he's building a huge UFC ring on the south lawn of the White House.
You UFC. Should say what UFC
yeah,
is.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure everyone in the audience is a huge fan of mixed martial arts. It's Ultimate Fighting Championship. So
yeah, it's not KFC.
No. Although, actually, he's more of a McDonald's guy. Give him time. But yeah, so his way of, this is almost beyond parody, his way of celebrating the 250th anniversary of the founding of America is he's going to have some big burly blokes fight each other on his lawn.
Okay.
She's like, you could go to any Weatherspoons.
It's not a hobby, Helen. You take everything away from it.
But, are we kind of seeing America's greatest hits 250 years in? We've got a war in the Middle East. We've got a Latin American invasion on the cards. Yep. You know, are we just seeing an action replay?
That's true. What have they... What have they
missed? I thought for a second I had this vision of actually the Ultimate Fighting Championship is going to be replaying. So one of them's going to be dressed as Abraham Lincoln.
One of them dressed as Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
One of them dressed as a weapon of mass destruction.
I'm more up for it now.
I'm into it.
Okay, so, and how's that going down with people?
Well, his approval ratings have hit the lowest that they have been in either of the two terms in the NYT Siena poll. So it's really not going well. But the interesting thing is that, I mean, I was about to say the phrase, you have to feel sorry for his staff. And then I realised, no, you don't have to. You absolutely do not have to hand it to them. So they have midterm elections in November, and there'll be lots and lots of seats in both the House and the Senate up for grabs. And basically, he has used it as a revenge tour. So anybody who's crossed him, he has endorsed their primary opponent. To the extent that the Republicans might actually just about lose the Senate in Texas, which has been very red for a very long time, because the person he's endorsed there is quite criminal. Actually, technically cleared of all charges.
Thank you.
It's for the one for the lawyer.
I don't know if we'll have to edit out you saying quite criminal and then just cut from you saying the person he's selected is cleared of all charges. That might, I mean,
that might
that'll do the job, I think, and the lawyer's
money
very happy.
Money was just resting in his account. That's because the incumbent senator for Texas was sort of 99% loyal to him, but may occasionally have said things like, "Sir, I don't think this war in Iran is a good idea."
Right.
Or, "Sir, you did lose the election." So he's basically hoofed out a load of people out of his critics. But the effect of that is also they've got 6 months to run around slagging him off, so that might become quite lively in their lame duck session. But also they might actually lose. I mean, you'd expect them to lose the House, might even just about lose the Senate.
Which means
that the Democrats then would control all the committees, so they can just subpoena all his people, mire him stuff, try and impeach him, all of that kind of, they just throw sand in the gears of anything getting done. And he just can't get any legislation passed, which would be a problem if he wanted to get any legislation passed, but I think he just wants to invade things. He's just kind of, he's just going to jazz hands it.
He's D-more pappy, but 3 years early, is what we're saying.
Very early, yeah.
Do you think he might invade America?
In a moment of horrible confusion, he's pointing the wrong way.
Him and whose army, yeah. Ian, how do you feel covering... I mean, the Eye obviously covers a lot more British politics. How do you feel looking at the state of American politics? Do you ever wish to hunt that bigger game, or is it just so depressing that you can't bear the prospect of it? You know.
No, well, I've got Helen writing a USI column every week, so I feel we're very much there. Yeah. At one point, readers did write in and say, "Can you stop putting Trump on the cover? It's depressing." But then it's just too funny. I take that as read. But you say his approval rates are low. What percentage is that?
37%.
Can you imagine a British leader having 37%?
But then I suppose we don't have the same kind of political fandom for either the Tories or Labour. Right? There's no group of hardcore Starmerites who go to all his speeches dressed as the border wall. Yes, I guess it was written as Hadrian's Wall.
What would you dress as for a Keir Starmer speech? A serious question. I'm not moving on until I've got an answer from everyone.
Okay. While you're thinking about this, I will say that this is a real thing. I went to a Trump rally in Reading, Pennsylvania, and they have all the people who sit in the front row who come dressed as Uncle Sam. And then they also have a guy who calls himself Mr. Wall, who has had a whole bespoke suit made that looks like bricks. Just saying, Ian, you love a suit. What you could have a Keir Starmer suit that looked like
It would be free, obviously.
Oh, what if it were... Could you go dressed as a tool?
Yes. A double act. You did a tool and a tool maker, I think, would be nice.
Yeah.
One of you goes dressed as a hammer and one of you in a sort of fifth in an apron. Yeah, okay, that's what I would go dressed as.
Ian, you had something to say that was interesting about the good chap principle, which...
Yes, no, I just noticed that American commentators who for years have said the British Constitution is unworkable because it relies on what the British snobbishly call the good chap principle, which means that people will behave well even if you don't write things down to stop them. Whereas the American Constitution is all there in black and white, checks and balances, we don't need this. And I feel now a slight sense of schadenfreude in thinking, well, we had the good chap principle, you have the bonkers lunatic constitutional checks and balances, which don't work. He literally doesn't care anymore.
Yeah, and the Supreme Court won't stop him. He's got 6-3 majority on the Supreme Court, which is the arbiter. Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, won't stop him. And, you know, he he's got this thing there where he plays J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio, so the Vice President and the Secretary of State, off each other. It's like, which of you is my favourite son? Who is my bestest child?
Because none of the sons are, because he doesn't bother going to their weddings.
No, I'm very busy this weekend. He said,
I'm hanging
and did
out with
nothing.
Marco.
He did nothing the weekend. Yeah. Anyway, yes. Sorry, it's sad. I feel sorry for them. I don't feel sorry for them.
No.
They did this to themselves. They deserve to be unhappy.
Okay. So.
Yes, they do.
Okay, so it sounds like the forecast is just more of this, and no effective brakes on the train. Really.
Is there any further he can go, proposing that not only do you pardon everyone else who's ever given you money, but you pardon yourself for the future, forever? That's a proposal that he's putting.
Yeah, he said that neither he nor his family can have their tax affairs ever investigated. I'm just going to try and give us a tiny silver lining here, which is if he's confined to doing a lot of domestic embezzlement, much like Peter Murrell, at a much larger scale, wouldn't that be better for Britain than him doing mad foreign wars? He's looting America rather than bombing places.
Do they not go hand in hand?
Okay, yes, I suppose it's possible to do both.
Yes.
He can multitask.
There is a morning and an afternoon in the day. Yeah.
And then there's all night for him.
I think that's the thing, because no one's on Truth Social apart from Mad MAGA people, that it's not really understood. And the night before he went to China, I think he posted something like 500 times. It was certainly in the triple digits. Mm. And Tony Blair should have a little word with him to discover some of the dangers of AI, because he now will just post the most obvious like AI slop pictures. He see that the meme of him as Jesus that actually got him into trouble was just AI slop. It was one he did of Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama and Joe Biden swimming in sewage in the reflecting pool. I mean, he's just your Facebook uncle.
But then the things that you think must be AI slop turn out not to be. I mean, he has genuinely put up a large gold statue of himself, hasn't he?
Yeah, at Miami Doral,
which people are kind of kneeling in front of.
I mean, it's Trump, so let's be honest, it's not really gold,
not really
is
gold,
it?
No,
it's guilt.
Paint.
Guilt? Guilt, not a word Trump is familiar with.
Hey!
But the irony-o-meter's given up, hasn't it? I mean, Putin goes to see Xi and Trump and his supporters say, that's pathetic, a guy who's losing a war going begging for help. You were there the week before.
I have to say a trip at which absolutely nothing happened.
No.
I mean, really, kind of an absolutely astonishing. You know, the leaders of the two world superpowers and no communique, nothing. He got nothing out of that deal.
But he saw a really big hall. Mm. The People's Hall in China. He thought, that's bigger than my hall. Not Hall of Money, which it is. But, and then he goes home and he talks about the ballroom again.
Yeah, he loves that ballroom.
He loves the ballroom. It's Greco-Roman Vegas.
Sounds like it's Greco-Roman wrestling.
But I do hope they have him interred like Lenin in the ballroom one day.
Can it be soon?
Most fitting tribute.
We should go to questions shortly, because we're running reasonably low on time. So I think there are going to be some paddles going around the room, and once I see a paddle, I'll shout out the number attached to it. Number one, hello.
Hello there. I'm very glad you put the cartoons double page, because I was losing faith. I couldn't read the serious stuff for quite a while, so it was only the cartoons that kept me a subscriber.
Excellent.
But what do we do when we get our own bonkers loony in Parliament and in the head of the executive in this country? Will you need to go weekly?
I think we turfed her out after 49 days.
Hey. No, I mean, I think seriously, we just emulate the American media. We roll over, sell out to anybody with some money, sack the cartoonists, and retire. Because that's American journalism at its finest.
Good. There we go. I saw a number four over here.
Oh, how come my dad hasn't won the Private Eye crossword yet?
Oh, okay.
Is he remembering to send his entry in?
That's an important question, because a lot of our readers think that it's rigged,
yeah.
And they think that some of the names are not genuine. And they are. And the repeated winner from the last 3 weeks, the last three issues, Mrs. Phyllis Hisglock.
Really?
Is a genuine person who is very, very good at crosswords. So I hope I've made that clear.
Okay. That was wonderful. Thank you both for the fantastic concision
right
of your questions.
Back.
Let's go to number two here, please.
You've been disparaging and scathing about politicians. Can you cheer us up a bit? Tell us British politicians that you admire and are doing a good job, please.
Nice.
I don't want to end anyone's career.
I mean, I can name someone. I find quite interesting. We haven't spoken much about the Lib Dems. There's a politician who's recently elected called Mike Martin, who spent a lot of time in the army, and now he's campaigning a lot about water. So he's interested in Turd of the Week stuff. The Lib Dems are filling a funny space in British politics in that they're not really filling it at the moment, but they're potentially filling that space. And I think that they're kind of weirdly filling a role that the Conservatives might have traditionally done. You know, when Kemi Badenoch was trying to be rude about the Lib Dems, she said, oh, they may be good for fixing the church roof, but, you know, they're not really good for anything else. Lots of people really, really, really want the church roof fixed.
Yeah.
In fact, fixing the roof is a metaphor for doing something valuable and doing it in a timely fashion. So, anyway.
And Nooks and Corners, the column that talks about church roofs quite a lot falling in or being set on fire, we're quite keen on.
Yeah, anyway, sorry to Mike Martin for
calling. Mike Martin, Helen?
Well, I think the place to look is the select committees, because actually that's where you will find people who've maybe come into politics because they're interested in a specific subject. They might not be massively ambitious in the sense of, like, they've always wanted to be in the cabinet. But actually, if you look at the work that they're doing, I think that, I mean, we talked about it on the podcast before, some of the stuff that they're doing in kind of terms of scrutiny. I mean, even things like if you watch the post office drama, you will find that the MPs were very involved with that story. There is still a lot of quite unsung work that gets done below the cabinet level, I think.
Absolutely.
I would say David Davis, who, you know, he's a Tory, not natural bedfellows. He was a Brexiteer, but his record on libertarian issues, particularly the post office and now on Lucy Letby, he gets up, he makes himself unpopular, he keeps the argument going. There are people there. Lord Arbuthnot, who was mentioned earlier in one of the sessions I went to, member of the House of Lords, who pursued that story all the way. I mean, the post office story. I mean, absolutely fantastic. So, yes, there are, but I try not to mention them too often because it ends their lives.
Terrific. Shall we come to another? I'm seeing...
There's number three right advance in the gangway.
Any advance on £25, please, for this wonderful bag of Nescafe Gold. Right, yes, let's go to number three. Thank you.
Do you think Mr. Trump will cancel the midterms? And do you think Nicola Sturgeon will cancel her visit to Hay on Friday?
Because she's running in the midterms.
I think she's going to set up in a massive camper van with a load of coffee machines in the back.
Not right. And the midterms?
To say briefly, I think he will try and do a number of things that are below that level. So already the Supreme Court has overturned quite a few bits of the Voting Rights Act, which is one of the things that guaranteed minority representation. All the way through this year, the Republicans and Democrats have been fighting about gerrymandering, essentially, to create lots more districts for themselves. The Republicans are currently winning that war. There are lots of state houses that have flipped to many more kind of majority, like Republican-friendly districts. So whilst I think that the splashy headline thing of him essentially declaring martial law and himself supreme dictator for life, I'm not ruling it out. But I don't know if he's necessarily got the attention span to be supreme dictator for life. But I think there are lots of fundamentally anti-democratic things happening in America, yeah, that we should be worried about.
Yeah.
I just wondered if you had any thoughts about what the Iranians are doing with their Lego videos, having a go at Trump.
I mean, unfortunately, they're really good. And I no, and I don't mean that in a moral sense. They're virulently anti-Semitic. But in terms of, like, much up there with Kanye West, actually at a technical craft level, they're excellent. Mm. And I think it's one of the things that's really interesting is that I'm not sure that the American establishment has quite got a grip on the fact that actually on social media, Israel is very unpopular. Young people are being, in the same way we talk about older people being maybe on Facebook, deluged with anti-immigrant videos. So anybody under the age of 25, their stream is just a huge amount of stuff. And so there are people in both the establishment wings of the Republicans and Democrats who just take that alliance absolutely for granted. And actually, generationally, I think that's really going to turn over. You're already seeing the effects of that in American politics. And those Iranian propaganda videos are absolutely part of it. They're incredibly, don't sing it, because it is incredibly catchy.
Right.
And you will be singing it forever. But I mean, they are, as I say, they preach it's all Epstein, it's all, you know, anti-Semitic conspiracies about money. But it is also packaged in this way that is very Gen Z coded.
And also, I mean, the technology, they're displaying a sense of humour. And the thing you want with your deeply unpleasant murderous enemy is not for them to be funnier than you.
Yeah, always, you know,
is there room on the joke writing team for the IRGC?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Okay, we're in absolute injury time. Let's have one very, very final one, and briefly, if you wouldn't mind, number two.
Yeah, what's the food like at the Coach and Horses, or do you go somewhere else for lunch now?
We've moved due to a number of incidents. and we've now got a much, much more tolerant lunch venue who only complain if some of our guests, for reasons that I don't want to explain, get locked in the toilet for hours.
Together.
And I'll leave you with that thought.
On that note, I think we're ending as we started, classily, and it only remains for me to...
Before you go, can I just say a round of applause for these amazing contributors?
Is that you?
Thank you. Great. Right.